You've heard our open themes with listeners talking about their vocations.
Missouri dairy farmers, love issues, etc.
And what they're doing while listening to issues, etc.
This is Mark from Michigan, and I am a lawnmower listener. We love issues, etc.
We're looking for more of these elements to include in our open themes. Tell us about your vocation, hobby, or what you do while listening to Issues Etc. Call the Issues Etc. comment line 24/7 at 618-223-8382. If you make a mistake, just start over. 618-223-8382. Thanks for listening, and thanks for contributing to Issues Etc. 618-223-8382.
If Jesus Christ gets down off the cross and told me Trump is with Russia, I would tell him, hold on a second, I need to check with the president if it's true.
When the dark gets darker, the light's going to get lighter. And people are going to be drawn not because it's what is similar, but it's what is different.
They, in fact, are not Catholic. They are more Roman than they are Catholic. We Lutherans are the true Catholics because we are maintaining the church's historic doctrine and practice.
The strength of our faith is not some sort of quality in the heart. It's knowing what God has promised.
Wisconsin turkey producers love Issues, etc.
There is one surefire way for your name to become a household word, and that is to get engaged to one of the royal family in Great Britain. Then the whole world knows your name and is watching your every single move. It's not just an obsession of the British. It's also an obsession of many people throughout the world. So Meghan Markle is now on her way via the engagement to Prince Harry to being a household name and one of the royals. Ordinarily, someone's religious background wouldn't be a big part of that story, but in her case, it is part of it at least, because at least as reported by the PR people for Prince Harry and in the British press, she is going to be baptized and confirmed, although she's said to be a Protestant in her religious background. She's going to be baptized and confirmed in the Church of England before the marriage. What does that mean? Is this bad reporting, inaccurate, a failure to rightly define terms? Welcome back to Issues Etc. Live this Thursday afternoon, the 30th of November. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Terry Mattingly is going to help us sort out some of that story from the media coverage of the religious pastor Prince Harry's fiance, Meghan Markle. And then we're going to talk sex scandals and sexual ethics with Mark Hemingway of the Weekly Standard. Joining us to talk about the media coverage of the religious past of Prince Harry's fiance, Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Glad to be here.
Why is Meghan Markle being rebaptized? Is that clear?
Well, first of all, we don't know if she was baptized in the first place, and that's part of the whole issue, because if she had been baptized in a traditional Christian setting, you know, in the name of the Holy Trinity, the assumption under Anglican protocol is that there would be no reason for her to be rebaptized. So the fact that everyone in the British press just keeps referring to her as a Protestant and thinking that that information is enough is really strange and is at the heart of this mystery. Because in a way, if let's say that her father was an Episcopalian, which means in her background is the Church of England on one side, her mother is just simply identified as Protestant. I mean, she's a yoga teaching social worker. We know more about what she does and everything else than we do about her religious background. Now, there's another interesting wrinkle in all of this, in that Meghan Markle is also an ambassador and a spokesperson for the Christian relief agency World Vision, which I think if you asked most people what's the religious identification of World Vision, most people would pretty much say evangelical Protestant. So there's a lot of wrinkles to this here. And the simple fact of the matter is, we don't know why she's getting baptized. I mean, it would be normal if she was a part of another tradition for her to be confirmed into the Anglican Church. But baptized? That's just a really interesting development here. A veteran religion writer that I was corresponding with earlier today said, depending on what her background is, this could be a very interesting ecumenical showdown or little mini media storm.
So I think we need to probably explain that there are Christian denominations that do rebaptize. I'm thinking about, just for the sake of argument, not just picking one out of a hat, your former denomination at one time, Southern Baptist, they do rebaptize.
Yes, because most do. There are moderate to liberal Baptist churches that do not. I've been a part of Southern Baptist churches that did not require rebaptism. I've been a part of Southern Baptist churches in my past that did.
But when you converted from being a Southern Baptist and then whatever else you were in the intermediate stage to Orthodoxy, you were not rebaptized, were you?
Of course not. Like many people heading to the ancient church, my family spent some time in Anglicanism as evangelical style Episcopalians, with me having more Anglo-Catholic leanings. But no. I mean, I've never heard of anyone being rebaptized heading into Anglicanism. Now, if you stop and think about it, the next question is, well, what Christian movements or what religious movements would not have baptized her or would not have baptized in the name of the Trinity? And since her mother is African American, the first thing that leaps out at me is whether there is some oneness Pentecostalism here. A lot of the dominant Pentecostal traditions within the African American church are oneness Pentecostals who don't have a traditional understanding of the Trinity. So, I mean, if it turns out that there's some Pentecostal background back there, this could be interesting. Could it be that the English press is calling Jehovah's Witness Protestant? You know, I mean, the simple fact is we don't know. And over and over and over in the stories, you just have, she is a Protestant and must be baptized to become part of the Church of England. And that's just bizarre. I mean, immediately people started calling that out on Twitter. I noticed that one of the people that said, this is just an example of how little reporters understand about religion, was one of the leaders of the Salvation Army, which, again, of course, is a church, even though most people don't realize that it's a church. It's just a really interesting story, and there's some interesting wrinkles here. In the British press, there is speculation that this baptism, that this requirement for baptism before confirmation into the Church of England represents some sort of backhanded statement by the Queen about the fact that the Prince Harry and Meghan are living together, which is intriguing or interesting. And that's interesting to ask about world vision. I mean, this thing just goes round and round. I mean, what is this young woman's religious identification?
So if we're dealing with accurate reporting, then the puzzle is very profound. Somehow she slipped through a traditionally Protestant church life without ever being baptized, either as an infant for those who baptize them that way. Like, we Lutherans would be considered, we don't consider ourselves Protestants, but we would consider Protestant, and we practice infant baptism, or baptism at a later time. Or somehow, as you've suggested, maybe the press just has mislabeled her religious background profoundly.
Yeah, that's a distinct possibility. The situation has been clearly described by public relations officials for the prince. Or I should say, it's the words that we're using came from PR people for the prince, which means to some degree the confusion may not just be at the level of the press. The confusion may be deliberate at the level of the prince's office and his handlers. So maybe that's who doesn't know anything about this. But any way you look at it, it's strange. If she's coming from a type of Protestantism that didn't baptize in any traditional way, that would make some sense. However, if she's coming from any normal Protestant background and they're requiring rebaptism, that's a very interesting and bizarre development within an Anglican context. By the way, in Anglicanism, if you convert to Anglicanism from Roman Catholicism, you do not convert. You're not confirmed into the church. You are received into the church because you have already been a part of an ancient Christian body, which is another part of this. I wondered when I first saw this story if somewhere in the British press there were people who are of the Anglican mind that Anglicanism is not Protestant, because Anglicanism makes claims to full Catholicity in terms of apostolic succession, because at the time of the formation of the Church of England, I mean, if you look past Henry VIII there for a minute and look at who's on deck within Anglicanism, there are plenty of valid bishops, validly ordained bishops, in the Church of England at its time to continue valid lines of Catholic apostolic succession. The only problem is that both Rome and the Church of the East, the Orthodox traditions, neither of the ancient churches considers mere laying on of hands by someone in apostolic succession to be enough for valid apostolic succession. It's a matter of right order and right doctrine. So, I mean, the orders of the Church of England are not considered valid by either the Church of Rome or the ancient churches of the East. This is all so complicated, but you can see it's kind of a part of the story, or it could be. The Church of Rome and the Church of the East consider each other's orders to be valid, but we just happen to be out of communion because of doctrinal differences over the role of the Pope and several other doctrinal issues that have emerged in the last 1,000 years, you know, including the Pope's decision to unilaterally change the Nicene Creed. Now, I say that as an Orthodox Christian, of course. That's the way we would word the situation.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of the religious past of Prince Harry's fiance. When we come back, he's often said that the religion of the press is politics. Is there something of that in this media coverage? Stay tuned.
In the early 90s, communication scholars began talking about the old concept of the newspaper. You know, those things on paper with ink.
Terry Mattingly speaking at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
The concept behind this, they called it the Daily We. That there was supposed to be a media product that we would consume that would help us learn about other people in our community, in our nation, and that we would at least be consuming some of the same information for the sake of debate, discourse, etc. The internet is absolutely brilliant at destroying the Daily We.
You can listen to Terry Mattingly's presentation, Making the Case for News Discernment, on an audio DVD of both of our 2017 Making the Case conferences. We'll send it to you for a year-end tax-deductible donation of $300. Just click the DVD logo at issuesetc.org.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Memoria Press now offers 6 levels of the Simply Classical curriculum for students with special needs. These full-year curriculum packages for children with learning challenges enable you to teach reading, writing, arithmetic, art, poetry, science, history, Latin, literature, and Christian studies with incremental classical methods. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and enter promo code LPR17 to save on resources for your home or school.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore, thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority. They've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. Thecleaningauthority.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Thursday afternoon, we're talking about media coverage of the religious past of Prince Harry's fiancée, Meghan Markle. Terry Mattingly is our guest, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate. Terry, you have often said in many conversations that the religion of the press is politics. I'm sure that that's as true in Great Britain as it is here in the United States. So is there something of that in the media coverage of this issue?
Oh, I think this is something way more powerful than politics. I mean, it's true that in England, the royal family and the crown, you know, is part of the state. I mean, you have an official church in the Church of England. But in terms of the role that the royal family play in British life, this is something that far transcends politics. This is celebrity. I mean, this is the ultimate form of celebrity. We've had nothing in American life that even resembles the degree of fascination with the private life and the celebrityhood of royals than perhaps maybe the Kennedys briefly seem to be on the verge of having that kind of stature. But no, this is a case where something that the press in a mouse-clicking celebrity clickbait age thinks is even more important than politics. This is entertainment. This is celebrityhood. This is the son of Princess Di marrying an actress from the world of entertainment who is biracial on top of all that, with all of the social and cultural implications of the, you know, what is he, fifth in the line to the throne of England, marrying a divorced American actress who's half black. I mean, and all of the cultural questions and colonialism and all this other stuff. This is big celebrity doings. It's entertainment.
So the baptism and confirmation will undoubtedly be private affairs. The wedding will be as public as I imagine the couple wants
as
it to
the
be.
World can get.
And these are those kinds of things that cause celebrities, the lesser lights of celebrity in the United States, to drool with anticipation, hoping for a chance to just simply be invited to something surrounding this. Talk a little bit about how the British press differs in that sense from the American press.
Oh, well, I mean, the obvious question that the world will want answered is Sir Elton John going to perform at the wedding? I mean, or only the after party? I mean, he played the funeral of Lady Di, right? I mean, does he get to be at the wedding? I mean, this is the level of question, you know, that we're going to be talking about. Like I said, this is celebrityhood at the top level. I think, to me, the really interesting question as we face not just England, as the world faces the loss of this queen, how long has she been queen? The short answer is World War II. I mean, basically. To what degree are we seeing the fact that she's making any kind of moral statement or requirement at all, if this is the Queen's doing, that there be a baptism and a reaffirmation of faith before this wedding? Is this kind of, in a way, the last stand for the Queen of England before Britain segues fully into moralistic therapeutic deism being the state religion? I mean, is it like a last cry? Are you familiar with the movie called The Queen?
Yes.
Have you seen it?
I have not seen it.
There is an incredible scene in it where the Queen is out on the grounds of her estate in Scotland. And she's out for a walk, and she turns and finds herself face to face with a gigantic elderly stag with like this massive rack of antlers. And it's most people consider this to be the most symbolic moment in the entire film. And the two of them just sit there looking at each other. And then she looks away, and then she looks back, and the stag is gone. And then later in the movie, as she's wrestling with the public relations fallout of the death of Lady Di, and the entire movie is based on, like, say, one life, 1 week in the life of the royal family at the time of the death of Lady Di and the public relations crisis that developed at that point. It turns out that that hunters on her land were able to kill that stag. And the queen, who drives around this territory in her own jeep, stressing to her people when it gets broken at one point, she stresses, "Don't forget, I built these things during the war. I know what a broken axle looks like." And she travels over to someone who lives on the edge of her estate and asks permission to be able to see the body of this stag, to just kind of say goodbye. And the way this is being interpreted by film critics is that this is literally one noble beast looking at another before their age passes. That it's a symbolic death of an era. Part of me just wonders, is England really ready for this woman to die? If Brexit was an earthquake in that culture, if you're looking for a difference between the old England and the new England, kind of the standards of the old British culture with the stiff upper lip and the let it all hang out world of modern London and celebrityhood now, I'm really interested in finding out what role the Queen did play in this. And some tabloids in Britain, you know, and Britain has the most tabloidy of all the tabloids in the tabloid world, are asking, will the Queen attend the wedding? You know, heavens to Murgatroyd, you know, what kind of a scene would that be if she didn't attend? So anyway, there are questions here, and they all have to do basically with journalists not asking any follow-up questions at all. In the BBC report on all of this, the religious details received like a sentence as opposed to all the other social details surrounding it. The status of this question of the baptism gets one sentence, literally, in the BBC coverage. It's the more populist, blue-collar-oriented papers that recognize this for the kind of heartstrings, sidewalk-level appealing story that it is.
So a good, experienced religion beat reporter that you often say is so much needed in these cases, what questions does that reporter need to ask to answer the question of why Meghan Markle is being baptized and confirmed, laid aside, baptized prior to her marriage to Prince Harry?
Well, question number one is, what does the word Protestant mean in her background? Like I said, this veteran religion writer I was corresponding with this morning, someone with decades of history on the beat, said this is a really big ecumenical story if they're requiring the rebaptism, if say her background was Presbyterian, Methodist, or even Baptist. This would be considered a really big deal in England, that this is being required of her. To what degree, you know, her first marriage was to a man who was Jewish, and the emphasis in some of the coverage has stressed the Jewish nature of their wedding, although the Jewish elements of the ceremony appear to have been more cultural, you know, than doctrinal or religious. So question number one is, what is her faith? Who is this woman, and does her faith mean anything to her? At which point I would then say, parentheses, what's she doing as a spokesperson for World Vision? I mean, maybe you call up World Vision at this point and say, pardon me, but what do you know about this woman who is an ambassador on behalf of your combination charity / ministry? It's certainly something I would not have anticipated, you know, in her background, that she currently has a relationship with World Vision. That almost implies that she's an evangelical Protestant, or that that has been in her background at some point. And once we find out that detail, if it's Oneness Pentecostalism or some Christian movement that really is unusual, at that point it makes sense to some degree why the baptism is taking place. If it's not, then you get into this whole other story of why, in this case, is either the royal family or the Church of England. And if you know anything about England and the polity of the Church of England, in which the Queen is the defender of the faith, capital T, capital F, the faith, who's requiring this baptism? Where did this request come from? Did it come from Meghan Markle herself, who just wanted to make this clarification? I mean, I'm becoming a British citizen. I'm going to be marrying into the royal family. This is something I want to do. Is that where this came from? Or did it come from the royal family? Or did it come from the Church of England? All three of those possibilities are fascinating in completely different ways.
If it came from the Queen, as I'm sure the tabloids would love for it to have come from the Queen, for all the intrigue it would imply, since she is the head of the church in both a political and a religious sense, does that amount to the Church of England? Should that be reported as the Church of England has requested that she be baptized and confirmed before marrying into the royal family?
Well, I don't think they would claim that she is the head of the Church of England. The title, the defender of the faith, is different from an ecclesiastical title, such as the first among equal, Archbishop of Canterbury. In other words, I don't think she has a liturgical role, and I don't think she has a fully even ecclesiastical role in terms of the selection of bishops, etc. She plays a role in it. So once again, we have a unique British situation, something more along the lines, I mean, of the role the Tsar, you know, used to play in the politics of the Russian Orthodox Church. You've got this kind of in, kind of headship, kind of leader. That's why I would go ahead and leave that as three different questions. You know, whether it's coming from the Queen, I can't imagine it coming from the ecclesiastical leadership of the Church of England. I mean, these are people that, if I can be blunt, don't seem to have a whole lot of doctrinal scruples at this point about much of anything. I mean, we have a leader of a major Anglican body in the UK asking his people to begin praying that one of the sons of Prince William will be gay, you know, so that someday we'll have a gay wedding at which the king and queen have to attend or something. I mean, this Anglicanism's pretty far out there right now. It has very traditional, a few, tiny number of traditional Anglo-Catholics, and it has lots of very biblical, Reformed, Calvinist, Protestant members in the low church wing of Anglicanism. But I can't picture the Protestant wing of Anglicanism requiring the baptism or rebaptism of a Protestant. You see what I'm saying? That would be even more intriguing. I mean, the Anglo-Catholics might have some sort of doctrinal reason for wanting to baptize a Protestant. What would the Protestant Anglicans want to baptize someone for? It's really weird, and all of it's rooted in the fact of all these things we don't know based on the coverage.
I just want one more question from you. You had raised the intriguing question of what happens when Elizabeth passes from this world. Her son becomes king, if I'm not mistaken. And that's a pretty complicated marital question right there.
Yes.
What changes then with respect to that position where he would now be the defender of the faith?
Well, Charles has at one point in his life said that he would like that formal title to be changed from defender of the faith to defender of faith, with the article "the" taken out. Yet then there are other times in his life when he does things that make you really wonder what's going on in his head and his heart, including the fact that he is very much an enthusiast of visiting the holiest place on earth from the viewpoint of the Eastern Orthodox, which is Mount Athos, you know, the independent kingdom state that's on a peninsula off of Greece. What's he doing all of those hours with the monks of Mount Athos? So, I mean, now you've raised a whole other issue, and that is, what is the content of the faith of this brilliant, fascinating, complex, and at times in his life quite messed up man who is next in line for the throne? Now, there you go. You've opened up another area worth asking about.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He is author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here.
When we come back, Mark Hemingway of the Weekly Standard will be our guest. We're going to talk about sex scandals and sexual ethics. He's written recently saying conservatives have been right all along about sex. We'll find out what he means after this.
Orphan Grain Train is the Lutheran Federal Credit Union Ministry of the Month. During November, if you open a Lutheran FCU loan to meet your financial needs, or if you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to Orphan Grain Train. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Lutheran Federal Credit Union. Good for you. Good for the church. LutheranFCU.org.
Do you want your neighbors and community to see what you're celebrating this Christmas season? Why not display an outdoor nativity in front of your home or your church? It's a great way to show others what Christmas is all about, the birth of our Savior Jesus Christ. Check out the Outdoor Nativity Store at OutdoorNativityStore.com. Durable, affordable, and American-made nativities, OutdoorNativityStore.com. OutdoorNativityStore.com.
Athanasius, Bishop of Alexandria in the 4th century, was known for boldly confessing Jesus Christ as both true God and true man. This is what we do at St. Athanasius Lutheran Church in Vienna, Virginia, just outside Washington, D.C., continuing this historic confession of our Savior, who died for us and now comes to us in word and sacrament. If you live in the D.C. area or just visiting, come join us. For more information, find us on the web, St. Athanasius Lutheran Church.
Comfort, comfort, ye my people, for unto us a child is born, good news of great joy, the titles of Christ, the Magnificat. These are some of the Christmas card themes produced by Ad Crucem. Send a greeting card this Christmas season that's centered on the gospel of Jesus Christ. AdCrucem.com, confessing the faith through art and word. AdCrucem.com, AdCrucem.com.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Come and experience firsthand by sitting down in classes and actually hearing professors, coming to chapel, which is always the high point of the day, to hear the Word of God and to lift our voices in song.
Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Paul Grimm on why you should consider visiting Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Spend time talking to professors. I mean, there's not a professor here who will not be willing to take time, whether it's after chapel during the coffee hour or just to come into one study and sit down and talk for a while, to answer questions, to, you know, help them to get a sense of, A, you know, do they want to be a pastor or a deaconess? And then B, is this the right place? And, well, maybe C would be the question, is now the right time for them to make that decision?
If you've contemplated the vocation of pastor or deaconess, contact Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155, or send an email to admission@ctsfw.edu.